Hi, and welcome to the McLean Chronicles. My name is Ross McLean. I'm here on my podcast to help explain some of the more complicated things in life and to help simplify them for people so you can make sense of them and try and find some direction in this crazy world. And what I want to talk about on today's podcast is about the importance and the difference between life and death. I don't think many people really understand it today. Everybody is so lost as to how the world is changing and where it's going. They don't know what to stand for. There's a lot of confusion. But let's make it real simple. Let's go back to a guy that I follow and think a lot of, Elon Musk, and his way of thinking, which is first principles thinking. He says, start from ground zero and work your way back up. That's how you can start rationalizing out what's a good way to look at something or how to move forward. Well, probably one of the most fundamental things in life is life or death. And what I see the problem now with people is they don't know how to choose between the two of them. They really don't realize that life is the key thing that you want to be on the side of. You know, when this war broke out over in Israel on October the 7th, it was very, very disturbing to see what happened. It was very disturbing to see how low mankind can go. Now, I've seen some of that before. I used to be a police officer. I've seen some pretty grisly things. But even the grisly things that were happening there in Israel shook me to see what was going on. And yet here we have a world that doesn't know how to call out evil for evil. Make no mistake about it, the Palestinian people are good. They need to be looked after, at least the ones that aren't actively supporting Hamas. Those people are victims of Hamas. And let me explain to you what I try to tell some of my friends. I've got lots of Muslim friends, but I tell them, I try to explain to them. I said, look, I like the Palestinian people, but I don't like Hamas, the terrorists. I say it's the same as in Ireland. I like the Irish people, but I never like the IRA. I like Italian people. I've got no time for the mob and everything it does with drugs and human trafficking and murder. You know, I like guys who ride bikes. I used to ride them myself. I don't have an inch to give for the Hell's Angels and the crime that they've caused with drugs and human trafficking as well. So if you're on the side of terrorism, I don't like you. I don't care what your nationality is. And that should be the way it is for everybody. Terrorism can't stand. But look, let's talk about where people are today. I talked about this a little bit before. There's a great book that was written called Man's Search for Meaning. It was about a survivor of the Auschwitz, one of the death camps over in Germany. He was a psychologist and he studied which people survived and thrived, if you will, in the death camp areas and which ones gave up and died and wilted and just went away. And the answer he came up with is the ones who succeeded were the ones who had something to live for. They want to live. Maybe it was for their wife, their children, a business back home, just some dream that they wanted to accomplish that they could see. They had something to live for. It's a very positive thing. Now, on the flip side of that, there's people who want something to die for. You know, when it comes to dying, there's a great song, I think it's by Toby Keith, he talks about, it's called An American Soldier. And when he talks about it in there, he says, look, I don't really want to die, but if dying's asked of me, and that's what I need to do, I will do it, and I will do it with honor when I do it. That's dying for something. You know, the saying that soldiers, what they used to fight for overseas, was for what they loved back home, not so much for what they hated over there. It's a generalization, I know. But there's something there. So I have to ask you, is there something for you that you want to live for? Is there something that you would die for? And if so, is it the right thing that you're going to die for? Or is it something foolish? You know, you look at a lot of the Middle East terrorists and what they're willing to die for is the fact that they've got nothing else to live for, really. The best out they have is to die in an act of terrorism. And then they think they're going to be rewarded for that. That's about the best they have to hope for in life. So do you want to die for something that's worthwhile? Would you die for your children? Would you die for your country? Would you die for some left-wing cause is what you want to die for? The fact that men should be able to play in women's sports, is that what you want to die for? You have to ask yourself this question. But I'm going to tell you something. A lot of people are confused today. A lot of them are confused. They will die for basically nothing. They'll want to die for nothing. Why? Because they really have nothing to live for. I look at a lot of these young kids today. Everybody, I don't know, from 15 up to 30 or their mid-30s. They're confused. They've been raised by teachers, institutions, and a media that's just left them confused. They've lived through recessions. They think that the world's going to end with climate change. Everything is going to kill them. There's no future for them. They can't get a job. They can't buy a house. They don't even know if they're a man or a woman and how they can have a relationship, have a children and family. They're just confused. They've got nothing to live for. Nothing. But you know what? A lot of them are looking for something. Maybe anything to die for or to support so that they feel that they're included or something. That's how they get a lot of the kids into the trans issues and things. They get recognized. They get rewarded. The teachers say, oh, you're great. Look who you say you are. They get rewarded for that. Is it the right thing? I don't think so. So when I look at these kids today, kids, young adults, I mean, Joe Warmington just wrote a column a couple of days ago about a young lady who went down and vandalized a Starbucks, put up some anti-Semitic writings on it, some posters and some writings on there about death and genocide and all of these sort of things. But you know what she went and did? She went and shot a video of herself after she did it, bragging about doing it. Why? Why? You know, to me, she was a microcosm of what happened over in Israel when those terrorists videotaped themselves torturing and abusing civilians. They did it and they put it up on social media. They wanted to brag about it. Very narcissistic that the most proud thing in your life you want to brag about is the taking of another life. See, I think there's a problem there. Life or death? Which side are you on? So people today are confused. I mean, this young lady, she went blabbering on her TikTok, I guess it was, or her video about why she did it and she didn't care. I have to tell you, she sounded like she was the love child of Kamala Harris and Justin Trudeau. I've never heard such stupidity out of a person in quite a while, recording it and putting it up. She's on there saying, I don't care if the police come and get me. I don't care if they arrest me. I don't care if I go to jail, she says. Well, think about it. Think about not caring if you go to jail or not. You don't care if you go to jail if you got nothing to care about on the outside, right? But if you got a family, a job, a business, a career, other people that rely on you, you don't want to go to jail. So once again, I put her off a little bit to some of the confused people. Another guy down, I think it was in the States, I'm not sure where it was, didn't like it. A girl from Starbucks was commenting on the war, and he bragged. Once again, he went on, recorded himself, put it online, saying, I found out where she worked, I went to her work, I confronted her, I followed to her car, I snatched her hat off her head, and then he proceeded to shred it and damage it and put it on the video as his little trophy, just like the Hamas terrorists did, their little trophies of terror. You know, there's a real problem today with people when they're confused. They've got small minds. They think that they're bright, though. They think that they're intellectual, and in their mind it all makes sense as to how the world should work, right? Sure, you can be a girl. Just cut your bits off. Sure, you can be a man. Just go get one stuck on you. It's a little bit crazy with how they think in their minds how things are supposed to work today. So I feel sorry for these people. They need to get some help. They need to figure out what is right and what is wrong and what side to get on. But we've done them a real disservice. It's going to be hard for these people to come back from their fantasy intellectual lives. But the other thing that's interesting about these people who do these sort of things, and we saw this really at the start of COVID, and it's a big problem. I've talked before in my podcast before about weak men that get power. They're very, very dangerous. So what these people like, they're basically weak in life. They're nobodies. Their life isn't going anywhere. It's kind of hopeless for them the way things are right now. So they need something to feel power. Now they've got some power. Now they can go damage and cause mischief to someplace or taunt somebody online and say something and put it out and show how big they are and what it is. And what this is weak people who think they've got some power. They all want power. It's really coming down to a power struggle today for so many of these people. But their problem is they're doing it for all the wrong things. They're weak. They haven't put themselves in a position of power. But guess what? They're fighting on the wrong side of it anyways. They're fighting for a death cult rather than fighting for life. So we've got some real problems going ahead with this society, and we're going to have to see how it works out. You know, one of the things that I did earlier in the week, I want to tag it on here, is a bit of extra info. I did an interview with Richard Surratt on Saga 960 about the bomb threats that came into one of the largest Jewish schools in Canada. They had to evacuate more than 1,000 people in a daycare next to it because they're actually concerned about bombs being placed in schools and daycares here in Canada. And there's a reason they should, because these people that are behind the Hamas group, they're clearly will kill anybody or anything. Hezbollah is behind them. Bombing is their specialty. Hezbollah's raised a lot of money in Canada for terrorism, just a lot of it. So there's a lot to be concerned about when you have threats over here. And I hope that the police start locking this down a lot more and laying a lot more charges so that these petty, weak little people who are trying to gain some feeling of self-worth and self-esteem in the wrong ideas have a bit of the brakes put on their wagon that's going downhill. So look, enjoy the rest of this interview that I did with Richard, and thanks very much for tuning in. Thanks for catching me on YouTube. If you have any comments or thoughts, please put them below. I'd like to look at them. Follow me on my Twitter feed at McLean Chronicles as well. I'd like to hear from you. For now, thanks very much. From Ross McLean.
We're back as the Richard Serrett Show continues on News Talk, Saga 960 AM.
Welcome back. I failed to mention, of course, the bomb threat today at Tannenbaum Community Hebrew Academy. That's near Finch and Dufferin. But yesterday, there was another bomb threat. This was at the Jafari Community Center in Vaughan, near Bathurst and 16th Avenue. In both cases, police did a sweep of the schools, and no bomb was found. And yet, obviously, these terrorist threats have to be taken seriously. Ross McLean, crime and security specialist, host of the McLean Chronicles podcast, is with us. Hey, Ross, how are you?
Good to be with you and the listeners, Richard. Good to be with you.
The police responded in both incidents very quickly. Obviously, they do a thorough sweep. The time and the disruption, obviously, is one thing. How are these sweeps conducted? Do they bring, like, bomb-sniffing dogs to buildings? How do they do this?
Yeah, well, to begin with, most Jewish institutions in this school, I'm sure, are going to have an excellent bomb threat response protocol. And what that means is everybody in there will have been advised of how to do things. And typically what you do, you're a Jewish school like that, you know everything that's in place in your school and what's supposed to be where. And if something new shows up, it's apparent to you. That's because of the way that they treat certain areas and where things are kept. So that's number one. Number two, yeah, the police, when they respond, they came in and they brought in this case, bomb dogs. Now, the Toronto police have about 30-odd police dogs, and about 10 of them or so are specifically explosive-trained dogs, specifically. The other ones that they have are general trained dogs that can also do explosive detection, but the specialists are going to be one of those. So the police would have utilized, number one, the people on staff who are on the bomb threat team, who know the facility very well, that could say what belongs and what doesn't belong, and the dogs that would have also searched along with those people to find anything that was missing. So they got through it, and fortunately, nothing was found.
How likely or how difficult is it to determine who's responsible for this? They sent a letter. I'm assuming, I don't know, it wasn't an email. It was a letter, I'm assuming, like an actual letter?
It was an email, actually.
It was an email. Okay. In both cases?
Yeah. Well, in this case, for the school today, it was an email that was sent. Now, what's interesting about this email And listen, whoever's doing this, I'm telling you, you think you're going to get away with an anonymous email bomb threat to a Jewish school. You better watch yourself. There's been some major gains in detection for looking at what our people think are anonymous emails when they send them, where they send them from. Everything from artificial intelligence is used to analyze them, dates, times. Of course, who's looking for the IP addresses. Now, this particular email was sent from a company that claims it's one of the most private and secure email companies in the world called Proton. A lot of journalists use Proton email. But here's a little mistake whoever sent this email is not aware of. Proton is not anonymous. It's private. They're required. They're based over in Switzerland, I believe. That's why they're there. They're under Swiss law and some other things. But there have been some recent cases where they had been told to turn over the IP addresses and the logs of their private email that they have sent to people. And they've changed their logging process for how they do that. And they do respond to court orders for finding things. So it may not be that anonymous, whoever sent this. The police can be on the trail. And just one other thing on this. There are no more highly technologically efficient people at the internet than the Israelis right now. In fact, people in Silicon Valley will tell you that the high-tech firms in Israel are far and away ahead of Silicon Valley. So I don't know how much time they'll have to help or assist with doing that, but I would not want to be going against the Israelis. They do some of the most, they offer law enforcement and the three-letter agencies some very sophisticated ways of tracking criminal people that nobody is even that much aware of. So I'm really hoping that this will turn up and they will find the person that sent this and that they will be charged.
What's the likelihood that it's the same individual responsible for both threats?
There's a good chance of that. I didn't see what how the other one came in or what the name that was on it or where it came in. But this is also where AI comes in doing the analysis. It looks at, they actually have things today, Richard, that if I take a section of your writing and I send it in, they can do a pretty good guesstimate of your age, your sex, your nationality, based on the words you used and the phrases that you used and the sort of things you put in. The world is not so anonymous anymore. You think that your writings or you can just put something down there. It's not that simple anymore. So if the police get a bit of a sniff towards this, I have a feeling that they will find out who did this.
Finally, finally AI put to some good use. And this would be when this person is apprehended and hopefully soon, this would be the charges, I would imagine, would be more than just uttering threats. This would be related to a terrorist a threat, right?
Yeah, at this point. I mean, I really wish the police, and I really wish they would act. Look, my tongue gets tied when I talk about how the police are handling all of this terrorism and the stuff that's going on right now, because I know they're trying to do a good job of balancing things and seeming like, you know, we're going to be fair to people. But there isn't really an equation when you're talking terrorism and right to protest. I mean, terrorists do not have the right to protest. Genocide promoters do not have the right to protest. People who are threatening genocide, threatening people's lives, supporting groups do not have the right to protest. They don't. The police should be charging these people with it. And that would, I think, put much more of a dent in the people's wanting to get involved in doing things that at this point are at minimum nuisance, at maximum criminal, and terrorist criminal.
I agree. I mean, I believe even uttering from the river to the sea now has to be considered a threat. I think if you stand up at a protest and you start yelling that out, I think they should the police should slap cuffs on you. Well, right now, Ross McLean is here, crime and security specialist, host of the McLean Chronicles podcast, and we're talking about two recent bomb threats made against two Jewish schools in one in Toronto that was today, and one in Vaughan last night. No bombs were found. Ross, how do we listen to the McLean Chronicles podcast?
Easiest way is to just catch me on my Twitter handle, McLean Chronicles. They can catch me there, and there's a link to the podcast there. Also on YouTube.
The crime unit, the hate crime unit. At this rate, with all of these incidents, do you suspect they're going to have to beef that up? I mean, I don't know, hire more officers, realign their resources, bring more people in.
Well, let me tell you, I've got a love-hate relationship with the hate crime unit. Okay. I mean, it's a great thing. You've got the hate crime unit. They're there to do things. But what happened, it's really the political hate crime unit, I'm very sorry to say. That's what it is. There's been crimes committed before that are clearly hate, and that what the police should be doing. One of the things I think the police need to remember is they're not the judges in these cases. They lay charges, and the courts are the ones that convict. So if you've got enough evidence there to lay a charge against someone for doing a hate crime, like I think you do have, if you're yelling death to Jews and you're yelling at Jewish people, I think that's intimidation. I think that's threatening. I think that's supporting a terrorist organization for doing it. They should be laying the charges. But look, a number of years ago, I actually helped represent someone, make a complaint to the hate crimes unit. And we did it. And it was over the Al-Quds when they were doing their death to all Jews, river to the sea, unpermitted marches up and down University Avenue. They came in. We did a full report on it. We had video evidence. We had translators. We had pictures. We had all the, I know the evidence you need to go to court. It was given to them. And we never heard back from them at all. Nothing.
Really? Really?
Because it's too political to go out and do that, is my guess. And look, I get it. And I've talked to some rank and file coppers that are out there that are fighting with all these things today. And it's almost like the brass are telling them, well, you guys should lay charges if you want, kind of thing. But they know what's going to happen to them if they step out and lay a charge. I think that the leadership on the Toronto Police, Peel Police, York Region, all these, they need to come out and say, lay the line down, tell it to the protesters. If you do to the river to the sea, we are going to consider that hate speech and you will be arrested and you will be charged for it. That is the line. Do you understand? You do that all the time as a police officer. You lay a line. You say, you cross this, I'm going to arrest you. It's what you do. So I would really like to see them start laying charges. Now, I have been told, in fairness, someone else was talking to some senior police, and I'm being told that they are gathering the information. They're putting it all together. They're trying to establish the networks of who the leaders are and all of these things, and they will be laying charges. However, I'll believe it when I see it, and I really hope that that is what they were doing. And the more they and quickly they lay charges, I think the less you're going to see bomb threats and these sort of terrorizing. And that's what they're doing. They're trying to terrorize the Jewish community is what they're trying to do here. So I hope they really step up to that.
Well, they better do it quickly because I see this ramping up and escalating. And what do we have to do? Wait around until someone is killed? We had a Jewish protester killed down in California. They've apprehended or they've made an arrest there. But if this keeps on its current trajectory, Ross, somebody's going to get seriously injured or killed, or more than one person.
That's my concern. And let me tell you about these bomb threats. We just had a house blow up in Scarborough the other day. Guy was making bombs, apparently. He was a bomb maker and had a manifesto, and his house blew up. Didn't really make the news. No one talked about it too much. Oh. We had some other bombs that went off. I think it was about a month, 6 weeks ago. Up in Barrie, where a bomb went off in a car. And then when the police came to it to look at it and see it, guess what? They found another bomb in the bushes beside the car, which is typically the sort of bombing that terrorists do, right? They set one bomb off, they let the first responders come in, and then they detonate the second bomb because they want to kill first responders. So Toronto is not immune to bombs. And, you know, Hezbollah operates a lot in Canada. They've sourced millions and millions and millions of dollars through terrorism funding out of Canada. And they certainly are known for their bombs and what they do. So we cannot take this lightly, these bomb threats. And I tell the coppers when I see them, I say, if you're out at a protest somewhere, some guy comes up and you see him lay down a knapsack or something like that, you better watch out for yourself and check that guy. You know, if you got a U-Haul truck that rolls up and just kind of parks near where you're at, watch out. That thing could be loaded with explosives, because that is the modus operandi of these Middle Eastern sort of terrorist groups. That's what they do.
So, this house explosion in Scarborough, a manifesto, are you able to reveal what was in the manifesto? Do we know? I mean, is this manifesto related to the Middle East situation?
We don't know. The name is not a Middle Eastern name. The person was tied to it. It may have been a person with mental illness. I don't know specifically. A good friend of yours, Joe Warmington, helped cover and get some of the information on that. To find out about it, you could ask Joe. He may know more about that, because Joe has got, you know what? I used to be a cop and I've got sources. Joe has better sources than me most of the time, for crying out loud. I don't know how he manages to do it, but he quite often surprises me. So no, we have not learned more about what the manifesto was.
Well, it wasn't too long ago, what, maybe less than a week ago, that the UK issued, I don't know if it was a travel advisory, but warning that a terrorist incident was likely to happen in this country. So we are not immune. It is early days, but I shudder to think what could happen here, again, if the police really don't beef up their resources and start taking these threats very, very seriously. Ross McLean, crime and security specialist, host of the McLean Chronicles podcast. Once again, Ross, how do we listen?
Catch me on my Twitter handle, at McLean Chronicles. You'll find me there. You'll find my podcast and my YouTube channel.
Thank you, Ross.
Thanks.